Hi, this is Jane Garvey, and thank you. This is the Woman's Hour Parenting Podcast, and you have downloaded it. Now, this is a conversation about how you prepare your children for divorce and separation and how you get them through it, and indeed, how you get through those first incredibly challenging weeks and months of what can be an extraordinarily difficult period in your life. But I'm really keen to get the message out there that it doesn't have to be the end of everything. Things will get better. But let's try and talk about the early days when, frankly, it's extraordinarily difficult. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what your circumstances are. My guest is Charlotte Friedman, who's a psychotherapist working in central London. Previously, she spent 25 years as a barrister specialising in divorce and separation. Now she helps couples and individuals going through this process. She's the founder of the Divorce Support Group and the author of a book on the subject called Breaking Upwards. Now, first of all, I asked her what her work as a psychotherapist entailed.
As a psychotherapist, I see a whole variety of people. I see, obviously, people who are going through divorce. I see couples who want to separate in as cooperative and as amicable way as possible. And, you know, men who have perhaps left, who have had affairs and how they feel, and women who might be on the receiving end of somebody just walking out.
It can be the woman who walks out, of course, or has the affair.
Of course it can, yes.
Let's be absolutely practical then. When you have to confront the children, and confront might not be the right word, but explain to them that the relationship is over, that one of the partnership will be going, what do you say and when do you say it?
Well, of course, what you say has to be age-appropriate, and what you say is going to be very different to a six-year-old than if you talk to your children who are in their 20s. And ideally, it's good to try and agree a narrative, a script, with your partner, if that's possible, a sort of cooperative story which is non-blaming, which sort of sets out some of the facts. When your children are young, what they want to hear is what their life is going to look like, you know, that their life isn't going to be turned upside down and that things are going to sort of change in such a way that they're very unsettled and insecure.
Sort of goes without saying, but probably worth mentioning, don't do it on the day before a birthday or a Sunday evening or around a special time of year.
I think that's very, very important. So it's not only giving some thought to what you're going to say, but when you're going to say it, because there has to be some space around it for your children to actually process it and think about some questions. And then also, you know, if they want to run off to their bedroom, slam the door and have a good cry or a good shout, that they don't have to then go out and do an exam or sort of go to school the following morning. So when is important.
You would like to think that adults wouldn't be that thoughtless, but I am an adult and I probably have been that thoughtless. So we'll move on. But you say in the book, you've written a book about this called Breaking Upwards, you need to try to create a non-blaming story. Now, what if you can't?
Well, I think it's always possible to create a non-blaming story, even if you feel so furious and that you're really angry with your partner, because there's a lot of blame there. You might locate the breakup of your relationship entirely in your partner. But to create a non-blaming story, what I'm talking about is to try and accept that whatever's gone wrong is between you and your partner, and that you don't have to recruit your children into your view of the world or your view of the relationship. I mean, you wouldn't do it if you stayed together, so you have to try hard not to do it when you separate.
And if a child asks questions, do you give them a full answer or as honest an answer as you can? How does all that work?
Well, just as, you know, if children ask you questions when you're in a relationship, you wouldn't sort of spill the sort of gory details to them. I think to protect them from it is quite important. So that's not to lie to them or to keep secrets, but to say in a kind of appropriate way that this is between me and Dad, and actually, you know, we're sorting it out, and that it doesn't concern you. I mean, obviously you have to say certain things. You have to say that you are upset, but that, you know, you will feel better and all sorts of things like that.
Is it a good idea to show that you're upset?
I think it's inevitable. I mean, if you've had a terrible shock because your relationship is over, you know, I think it would be beyond human endurance to show that you're not upset at all.
What about a certain amount of ambivalence which can enter proceedings where a woman, and of course it could be a man, I need to be very careful here, but what if it is a woman who, on the surface at least, is desperate for, let's say, the man to be involved with childcare, but also might doubt their ability to carry out these parental duties? What about that?
Well, It always strikes me that when people separate, suddenly any sort of differences in parenting sort of are highlighted. There's a sort of stark reality to that. And often people don't feel at all pleased by the way their ex-partner is parenting the children. And you have to have conversations about that. But also people don't necessarily listen. And bedtimes are different, food that's been given is different, boundaries are different, sort of movies that you might allow your children to see are different in two households. It's very difficult to reconcile the two if you don't have a sort of collaborative, cooperative relationship as parents to the children.
But it won't long term do anybody much harm if they have a lot of ice cream on a Friday night and go to bed half an hour later than they might normally. You just have to accept that, don't you?
That's what I say in the book. And I think that it's really important to understand that when you're really angry because somebody's being, your child is being fed pizza or has watched a film that shouldn't watch or gone to bed at 9 instead of 8 o'clock, that actually it's about holding on to a grievance and keeping you connected in some very unsatisfactory relationship with your ex rather than it being about the children's best interests. Because as you say, it's not harmful. No child has ever grown up and said, oh, when I was with my dad or with my mum, I went to bed too late, or I was given too many presents. You know, that was really
dreadful.
That's
why I'm the Chancellor of the Exchequer, yeah, stroke a High Court judge. Yes, OK. Or indeed, headmistress or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to cover all my bases there. What about if you're actually, you've worked and you've been with your children and actually you don't know any different, and then all of a sudden you have a life where actually you have rather more free time than you might have been used to? That can be tough to adjust to.
Sharing children, I think, is one of the most painful things and the thing that's so different when you separate. Because instead of being with your children when you come home from work or when they come home from school or at the weekends, and that you're in charge of running the family business in a way and being very involved in their day-to-day sort of care and management, you suddenly only see them half the time or every other weekend or two nights during the week. And it's really painful. What do you do? You know, you feel the loss of it. And of course, it's important for children to feel secure enough that they can go and see their other parent without feeling that they're letting you down, the sort of resident parent, and that somehow you're going to kind of collapse when they're not there.
So you must reassure them that this is a good thing to do and that you'll be fine.
The most important thing for children, because I see many adults in my consulting room who have been the children of divorcing parents, is the idea that they are not sort of messengers or spies, or you're not recruiting them as judges, but that they can come and go between two households and be children, which is really their job.
Yes, that is, and that's their only job, and they've only got one childhood, and this is it.
And that's it.
Yes, it's a hell of a burden, actually, when you think of it that way. But also, we have not discussed relationships where there's been horrific violence or abuse, and there are very, very different set of circumstances.
But absolutely.
Very, very briefly, your basic rule is, if you can do this without criticising the other partner, then everybody will benefit.
Everybody will benefit. And more importantly, your children will benefit, because then they can grow up to be fully integrated adults who are capable of having relationships themselves. And they can see actually how conflict is managed and resolved in a cooperative, collaborative way.
Charlotte, big reaction to you. Not surprising, really. Can I read you some emails?
Yeah, please do.
Don't look worried. It's all right. This is from an anonymous listener. I have always taken a view to tell the truth to my children, and at the time they were 14, 11 and 12. I was honest with them about how I felt, what had happened, and I continue to be honest. Many people advised I should say certain things about my ex-partner, but until you're in that situation, you actually can't really offer advice. You need to do what's right for you. I personally could not and still cannot endorse some of his behaviour, regardless of whether he was my children's father or not. I was dealing with somebody who was and is a narcissist, so the best policy was honesty. Now, it doesn't mean to say the children will assume your views about your ex, but I think you should clearly state your feelings and make clear it is your opinion. What do you think about that, Charlotte? Because obviously children aren't, they're not adults. They're not always capable of making sophisticated decisions about what they're hearing.
Children, depending on their age, don't have enough experience of the world to make sense necessarily of what you're saying and to work it through. And the truth can sometimes be a bit of a blunt instrument. So although it's important, obviously, to be truthful, to not tell lies to your children, it's whether they're capable of managing what it is that you're saying to them without it sort of impacting them and recruiting them to one view or another.
And The tendency, of course, is that you want them on your side. Well, you would, wouldn't you? Where else would you want them?
But I don't think the job is for children to be on your side. If you have friends, if you have a support network, you know, if you have a counsellor that you can talk to, you don't need your children to be on your side. What you need your children to do, you know, which I've said before, is to be children and to be free, so they don't have to sort of make those decisions about who's right and who's wrong.
This is an experience that a listener called Natasha had. My ex and I, when we had our divorce chat, we were overheard having the conversation. We were actually camping in France. So our children, who were at the time aged 8 and 11, came into the cabin and asked us about it. All four of us then spent the next couple of hours holding each other, sitting on a sofa, telling them it was not about them, they'd done nothing wrong, and that although we still loved each other, we were no longer in love with each other. We told them it would be all right, and it was this commitment in this conversation to honour them. That is the reason that we now have a kind, respectful and mindful divorce, and we are grateful friends to this day. So it can bumble into some kind of reasonable conclusion, can't it?
Well, that's a really good thing to hear, and I think that's the absolute best that you can hope for, that you can talk about those things and that you can tell your children that you're still a family, that you're a family that's changed and things change all the time, but you're not a family that's broken. You just are a family in operating in a different sort of way, which is what they've managed to do.
This is one of our listeners on Instagram. Such a huge topic, she says, absolutely massive. Making sense of a situation you've never been in before and trying to cope isn't easy. Holding on to your waves of emotion and knowing how to help your children whilst dealing with any demands is actually terrifying. I regret literally not holding my then 2-year-old more, giving him reassurance and comfort. That listener needs to know the 2-year-old won't remember anything about this, so at least they can let that go.
You know, I'm so struck by how easy it is to blame yourself for all sorts of things in retrospect and to look back and to think you've done this wrong and you've done that wrong. It's so impossibly difficult at a time when you're at the beck and call of the most overwhelming feelings as a result of separation, that you have to be really together enough to not only navigate a very difficult legal process, but to manage your children's experience of divorce, which is very different from your own experience. But I think when you're going through all those feelings, you think that it must be the same, and so you worry about them so much.
Now, this is complicated. I won't mention the listener's name. My niece has had years of therapy because she couldn't tell her mother things about her father, because her mother would never criticise him, or indeed, she never spoke badly about him at all. Consequently, she felt very alone and rejected her entire childhood and was subject to emotional abuse by the father. So there has to be a middle way, and parents do have to be open and honest, or the children won't be safe in the end. Now, I did say that we had only spoken about situations in which abuse and violence hadn't occurred, but I think that's quite troubling, that email.
I think the word open is a very, very important one. So whatever you choose to tell your children, you have to be open to not only their questions, but to hearing if things aren't right in the other household. And you have to invite a dialogue. You have to ask children if they're OK. You have to give some space so that they can actually communicate with you. And you know, I think it's important to say that a silent child is not a child that isn't listening. That silent children listening, they need to know that there's a channel of communication whereby they can actually say what's going on, and that they'll have a parent who's receptive and not a parent who's going to be shut down about what gets said.
If your children are of school age, should you, as a matter of routine, tell the school?
I think it's important because your child might go to school feeling very miserable or might be off their game. They can't do their homework. They're not concentrating in class and they're not capable of actually saying why that is. So depending on their age, you need as a responsible parent to go and say, look, this has happened in our household. So, you know, my child might show signs of being in distress or not being able to think or, you know, get into trouble or whatever it is. And this is why. And can we have some sort of care around that?
Yeah. And it won't be, I mean, I suppose you need to, the teachers involved need to play it in the right way. I mean, not quite a big ask of them, to be fair.
Yes, I mean, a lot of schools have sort of counsellors that they can actually signpost the children to or be in touch with the local CAMS service or whatever it is. And, you know, to just emphasise that, please, can you deal with this confidentially? Because, you know, the whole community doesn't know. And I'm going to tell my child that I've told you this.
We're not going to mention a name here, but there's a rawness about this email, which I think you might recognise based on your career. But the listener says, I disagree with your divorce expert. My husband is leaving his children and causing huge emotional damage to them because this is what his parents did to him. This is her theory, I should say. As a result of their acrimonious divorce, he is incapable of dealing with conflict and disagreement and sees leaving as the only option. He's putting all the blame for our splitting up on our relationship, when actually I just think it's down to the sheer hard work of raising kids. I don't want my children to think that splitting up is just what people do and is the only way to deal with things. What do you think?
Well, it's a very painful experience. The person who's emailed has got her idea of why it is that they've separated.
She might be onto something, because you say yourself you've met a lot of people who are from families where divorce has happened. Doesn't necessarily mean you will get divorced.
Well,
but
it can go either way. If you're the child of divorcing parents, you either sort of stick through thick and thin in your relationship because you don't want to have the same experience, or in some way that experience hasn't been digested fully, and so you just act it out yourself in your own relationships.
Yes, and it does sound as though that might be what's happening there, that the man doesn't feel he wants to be his parents, so he's getting out.
But I think the important message, I think what she's written is, you know, he has left us. That might not be the situation. I don't know from the email whether he's left the children in the sense of he never wants to see them again, or he's left the relationship or the family, which is so painful that it feels like he's left us.
And we should say, of course, that men often, unfortunately, lose contact with their children. That can be for a multitude of reasons. It doesn't mean they don't want to see them, does it?
The whole issue of contact can be very, very difficult. And it is, in fact, the children is the only way you can sometimes hurt your ex-partner, because you can use them as weapons against your ex-partner.
But you shouldn't.
But of course you shouldn't.
No. This is from Paul. The lady talking about how to treat children in a breakup just isn't in the real world. How can I be nicey-nicey to my soon-to-be ex-wife when she has turned my life upside down and continues to twist the knife? To be cool with it is to let her off the hook.
I think that is the absolute crux of the issue.
It is, isn't it?
That's the crux of the issue. And nobody is saying that one person should be nicey-nicey to the other person, or that you're not entitled to your very, very legitimate feelings about what's happened to you. All that's being said is try to not let that spill out into the arena of bringing up your children, because it's a separate thing. And not to recruit the children in order to play out your understandably hostile and difficult feelings towards your ex.
I think you said to me earlier, and it's a really good way of thinking about it, your children are not going through a divorce. They're living through one, but they are not divorcing anybody.
Mm. Absolutely. The children, all they want to know is that their life is going to be similar, or if it's not going to be similar, what it's going to look like. They want to know what their routine is going to be, how often they're going to see the other parent, if they're going to move, what's the flat going to look like, if they have to change school, where are they going to go, are they going to have the same friends? Those are legitimate questions that they need answers to.
Charlotte, we could go on. Really, we could. There's been an absolute shed load of emails, which I think indicates the appetite for more support and information at what can be an incredibly difficult time. But let's end on a more positive note. Charlotte, you do start to feel better, and life really can improve.
What I say in the book, and that's why it's called Breaking Upwards, is that divorce is not only an end, but it's the beginning of something. That if you know people who have been through divorce, then a couple of years later or 3 years later, you can see that they're happier than they were before, and that it's, you know, that life continues.
It really does. Charlotte, thank you very much. That was Charlotte Friedman, and this has been the Woman's Hour Parenting Podcast. If there's a topic you would like us to discuss on this podcast, please do contact the programme.